Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
All right, yo, what's up? It's your boy, D. Starks.
Starks the Artist.
You are now tuned in to Just Different Podcast, where we talk everything, faith, life, and culture. We're here back again another week. And I really wanted to get into a conversation around how to let go of hard things. And I didn't know if I wanted to do this because last week when we talked about outgrowing your environment, it was very similar, but I feel this relates to not just relationships, but different habits or strongholds and just cycles that we found ourselves in within our life, no matter what that looks like. And I think this has been something that's been a reoccurring thing for me because of a quote we've probably all seen on social. It's like gone viral, and it's one of those you know, those posts are just like recycled by all the accounts that come back up like every 3 weeks or whatnot. But there's one that says, at some point you must choose between your dreams or your distractions, but you cannot have both. And I think that that's been something that I've been wrestling with of a lot of different aspects of my life that I know have to be let go of for me to get to where I need to go. And almost relating that to spiritual context, something I put down is we have to make a decision between following desires of our flesh or the righteousness of God, but we can't do both. We can't live within this middle ground of what that looks like. And it talks about that in Matthew 6:25. It says, no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. And off of this, I remember I saw More Purpose podcast hosted by Marlon Clarence Sellers. They posted a clip from one of their episodes and basically proposed a question of, are you cheating on God? In the sense of, you're giving him your Sunday, your Wednesday, your life group throughout the week, but on the weekend, you're going back to your side chick. Whenever you get a moment or a time or just an opportunity for you to go and entertain that which is outside the covenant or the decision that you've made, you indulge in it.
Right.
Behind closed doors, but nonetheless, your commitment is divided. As I was thinking about that, I was thinking about how, you know, like there's always these things we know we need to let go of, but we still leave the door open to. And I was actually having a conversation like 2 weeks ago when I was in Nashville with somebody who was like recommending a book to me. And they had recommended The Bait of Satan by John Brevere. And one thing that they said is they were like, well, there's so much in this book, but I can only give you just a small snippet of one of the highlights for me. And they said that the enemy doesn't need much. And they were talking about how, I don't know if you've ever experienced it yourself, or you may have seen it in a movie or a TV show, whenever someone is trying to close a door and someone steps their foot in that small little crevice right at the edge or at the end before they can close it.
Yeah.
And it creates this resistance or the stop where they can't accomplish or get to what they want to do in terms of closing the door. And all they needed was this small little sliver for them to still get access to everything in the room. And that's exactly what happens whenever we are still holding on to these things. It's the enemy doesn't need much. If we leave that crack open, all he needs is that foot in the door for him to start to gain access to everything else that's in the room, that everything else that's in our life, that's in our mind, that's affecting us spiritually, mentally, emotionally. And so I thought that was profound. And also realizing that whenever we talk about this idea of strongholds, things that have this very intense control over ourselves or our life, one thing that I heard was a stronghold requires something stronger than it to come in and release it. When you feel it's something you can't remove, God has to. And so when we think about that, even in that particular analogy or idea of that foot being in the crevice of that door, or we need someone else to come and remove this individual from our room, from our presence, from getting in and impeaching on the freedom that we have, and that's God himself. I believe that sometimes we just leave too much room for the enemy, and it's just, he doesn't need much, and that's what I'm realizing. Like, it's the little things.
Too much room, bro.
Did you watch that movie?
What movie?
Oh, no, you didn't. I watched it on Netflix last night. It's called, like, it's like the little things, I think, or the small things.
I see it.
It's about this cop who tried to solve this murder with, like, these detectives or whatnot, and, you know, they just found these little clues or whatnot, but go ahead.
It reminded you of the movie, what you were saying?
I mean, you a movie buff too, bro. You love movies. So I'm like, surprised you ain't seen this movie.
I wasn't telling
you. You've seen every movie known to me.
Not for real, though. He's not even lying to y'all. But I'm glad we're talking about this, because I've been reading this book titled As a Man Thinketh. I forget the author's name at this point, but I was talking about this book in a couple episodes ago, and it was Battle for Your Mind, I believe it was titled. And I think this goes so perfectly with it. But he was talking about this concept. I'll sum it up with this quote that he said. He says, "Men are anxious to improve their circumstances, but are unwilling to improve themselves." And it immediately reminded me of the verse in Matthew 12:33. It says, "Make a tree good and its fruit will be good. Make a tree bad and its fruit will be bad." And it kind of just brought me to this place where I had to recognize that it all starts with me. It starts with yourself. In other words, like, there's a root to everything. That's essentially the concept of this whole entire quote, what he's getting to in this book, what the verse is talking about. There's a root to everything. And I think we always get so caught up on the fruit of the root. That's like, we try to change the fruit. It's like, nah, it's just going to continue to happen. When we're talking about these cycles, we're talking about these habits, we're talking about these things you have to let go of, we kind of look at them, they are the end all be all themselves, when there's actually something else that's attached to that we have to uproot, that we have to get to. And I want to get back to this quote where it says, "Men are anxious to improve their circumstances, but are unwilling to improve themselves." I think what happens is we get to this point where the circumstance starts to change us. And I don't know how else to word it but that. I've been in situations in my life where I've been in cycles, and it felt like I was in that cycle for so long that, like, my character was being affected, that the way that I move was being affected, like, it was affecting my mood. And because of that, we assume that we have to change the circumstance itself. Because the circumstance is changing me, I have to change the circumstance. When it's like, the reason it all started is with something within yourself. There's either a thought process, there's a lack of faith somewhere, there's a mismanaged thought, there's something somewhere that started this cycle, that started this mindset, and then it fed into it becoming a habit, and then that's when it felt like it was affecting you. But you can't allow yourself to be tricked by that, because it really all did start with something within yourself. Once you recognize that, you're saying it, then it comes to allowing God to reveal what that thing is and inviting him into that place. I brought up this verse very recently, Philippians 2:13. "It is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good will." And that's exactly, I think, the beautiful part about it is it starts with you, but at the same time, God's willing to partner with you. You invite him into that place and he will transform you. He'll work in you to will and to act, to do his purpose that he's aligned for your life. But I do think it's something that's important to note, though. Like, it really does start with you. You can't focus so much on letting go of the thing, because I think that's where frustration has come for me in my own life, where I see this thing that needs to change. Because that's where it starts. God's telling me I need to let go of this thing. I recognize I need to let go of this thing. I'm trying to let go of this thing, but I can't. But it's because I'm focusing on the thing itself and not necessarily the thing that is tied to within me. And I do think, as you're intentional about praying and tapping into your spirit, God will give you the spirit of wisdom and revelation to recognize what that thing is. And then, like I said, at that point, it's just inviting him in and allowing him to do his work. But I do think a lot of frustration can be bypassed if you just recognize that fact right there, that it just starts with you.
And this thought just came to my mind as you were talking. I was reminded whenever you were saying that, when it came to really getting to just the root, the foundation, and the stem of whatever it is that you're struggling with or what may be hard for you to let go. And I was reminded on why I really wanted to do this episode and I put this particular topic down. It's because not too long ago, it was right before we had an event for the Cove. I was there with all the founders and we were going through the walkthrough and we were, you know, just praying over the event. And one thing that one of my friends said as he was praying that he heard is the fact that God wants to do an excavation was the word. And it was interesting because we were like, oh man, like, okay, what does that mean? Like the word itself and that idea or that concept and the definition. And so I just found it and it says, excavation is the act or process of digging, especially when something specific is being removed from the ground. Mm. Archaeologists use excavation to find artifacts and fossils. And so I know I've been on this kick recently, and I don't know, some of the messages and even conversations seemed very similar, but just different iterations and variations, because I believe there's an excavation that God wants to do on our hearts.
Yeah.
Right. I thought it was powerful that I said archaeologists use excavation to find artifacts and fossils. So I believe that God is the archaeologist in this sense, and he's wanting to go and dig in the deepest part of ourselves, our hearts, our trauma, our past, to pull up these fossils, these dead things that need to be removed. That's so hard.
That is so tough, bro.
And so that's why this is so important, right? Like when we talk about what I mentioned at the beginning of, there's a decision that you have to make and you can't serve both. And so God has to do this almost extensive work in us, to Jordan's point, of getting to like the root of all of this, like combing through all the scenarios, the situations, the hurt, the pain of whatever it is, or even just the lack of discipline, you know, that may be within us of, you know, what's keeping us away from him and ultimately our attention divided because we can't have a commitment to one particular area of our life that is counterintuitive to God himself. I think we talked about this in Leaving the Familiar, possibly. I don't know what it was, but essentially where we're the anchor of our life. Right. We use that analogy. And this comes up here is because, you know, if I'm anchored in the desires of my flesh, I can't even hope or even try and believe that I can actually follow the righteousness of God and the path that he set before me, because I'm essentially a slave to what is holding me down and what I've tied around my feet.
Right.
And that's what's going to push me in the directions of my different areas of my life. So yeah, excavation. That's why this is important. And so there was a verse that I was looking up, and this is essentially turned into me wanting to recite essentially the whole chapter. So this is Romans 6, and I felt this related to everything. And I really wanted to talk about the power that we have over sin and how like we're called to be a slave to righteousness and not the world. And so it says in verse 11, count yourselves dead to sin, but alive in God in Christ Jesus. Therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal body so that you obey its evil desires. Do not offer any part of yourselves to sin as an instrument of wickedness, but rather offer yourselves to God as those who have been brought from death to life, and offer every part of yourself to him as an instrument of righteousness. For sin shall no longer be your master, because you are no longer under law, but under grace. So I'm going to get into the rest of this chapter, but I wanted to stop here because I thought this was profound. And so it just, in the latter part of this, in verse 14, it speaks about the fact that sin is no longer our master because of the power we have in Jesus Christ through his grace and through the blood that makes us righteous. And that's fitting because of what just happened this past Sunday in terms of us celebrating the resurrection. So that's important for us to understand, is the power that we have. We've been also talking about a lot about how you will never act on what you don't believe. Yeah. So a lot of people, And we ourselves can sometimes stay in chains in these cycles because we don't believe that there's actually a way out. Mm-hmm. So we just stop fighting. We stop taking the steps and we stop trying to go to the throne because there doesn't seem any hope for me to actually get out of whatever it is that I'm struggling with or what seems to have all of this power over me. So it's like, okay, I guess this is what I just live with, or it's just a cycle that I'll have to deal with or go through the rest of my life. When it comes to this anger, this lust, this pornography, this depression, or whatever the case may be. And I just wanted to break that down there from that verse. And when it also talks about just the emphasis on not offering yourself up to wickedness or any part of yourselves to sin, back to the fact that the enemy doesn't need much, and not offering any part to any extent of your being, your surroundings, your environment for you to even come under the power of sin again, mm-hmm. to any extent. And also what I was thinking about is I was talking to one of my friends and he was speaking to me about the fact that there's such a specific reason that the Bible uses the language that it does. And even when it talks about crucifying our flesh and becoming dead to sin. And one thing that he said that I don't know if we mentioned on the podcast before, but it's the fact that a dead man can't be tempted.
Yeah.
Like when we begin to kill ourselves and our desires and what may be controlling us through our flesh, we have to die, because a dead man can't get angry. A dead man can't be compelled to lust. A dead man can't be compelled to lie and or be divided in his commitment. Like a dead man can't be moved by anything of his flesh.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the Bible calls us to die.
Yeah.
Like there's such a significance to that. And I thought that was so profound. So getting to the rest of this, starting at verse 15, it says, "What then? Shall we sin because we are no longer under law, but under grace? By no means. Don't you know that when you offer yourselves to someone as obedient slaves, you are slaves of the one you obey, whether you are slaves to sin, which leads to death, or obedience, which leads to Christ?" And so I love this because it's basically saying whatever you listen to becomes your master. And we're always in this continuous fight of, will I listen to my flesh or am I going to be led by what the Spirit says? Then it goes on to say, "But thanks be to God that though you used to be slaves to sin, you have come to obey from your heart the pattern of teaching that has now claimed your allegiance. You have been set free from sin and have become slaves to righteousness." And it's interesting. We get cooked in this next verse. It says, "I am using an example from everyday life because of your human limitations." "Just as you used to offer yourselves as slaves to impurity and to ever increasing wickedness, so now offer yourselves as slaves to righteousness leading to holiness." Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was so powerful. Just this idea of starting with whatever you listen to becomes your master.
Yeah.
And so from that, we are literally called to be slaves to righteousness.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to look at this idea and this concept of what is a slave and what constitutes that type of lifestyle. A slave is one who is completely tied to their master and everything that they say. At their voice, you move, and there is no choice in which you have in the matter. You have made a decision that completely binds you to whoever is leading. And so that's exactly what we're called to do when it comes to righteousness. In the same way that we get these urges and these inclinations and we decide to listen to them, fall into them, give into them, and say yes, it's the same way that we're supposed to be with righteousness when it comes to the fruits of the Spirit, when it comes to conforming to the image of Christ and what he's called us to do, and in our obedience. It's the same concept and idea, just pointed in a different direction.
I think, because I was going to go in this direction, I think being a slave to righteousness becomes a lot easier when you recognize like who the master is, like when you truly understand it. Sometimes I'll be reading Paul's letters and I've been reading through Acts and like his story, road to Damascus, all that, his conversion. Like, bro, sometimes he makes it look easy, bro. I'll be honest, like, obviously he talks about how he faces persecution, like, you know, he's in prison so many times, brought before the courts, but in the way that he reacts, he just makes it look so easy, and I genuinely think it's because he fully understood who the master was, right? Like, there was something about that encounter he had on that road, bro, that just completely shook him, and he from that moment on, he never wanted that view of God to fade away, and he always had God in his view, and I think that's what will make it easier for us as well when it comes to letting go of these things, which is the direction I was going to go in, is really fully recognizing who God is. We had a Bible study recently, and we were reading in Genesis chapter, you know, 1-2. Yeah, Genesis chapter 1 and 2. And I was reading through the moment where the serpent was trying to tempt Eve or whatever, and I don't know why I've never thought this, but I was just like, yo, like, why would she listen to this, like, this random serpent, bro? Like, this random serpent. And it's, like, over God. Like, come on. Like, you're walking with God, his presence, whatnot. And I had made a point. I said, it's not about what's being said. It's about who's saying it. And it's about, yeah, it's about who's saying it. And I think what that means for us in our lives, like, when God is telling us to do something, it's not even about the thing he's telling me to let go of. It's not even about the thing he's telling me to do. It's the fact that he's telling me to do it. You know what I mean? It's the fact that, like, his character and who I know him to be, I got to let go of this thing, right? Because he's holy. He has my best interests at heart. He's loving. He's all of these things. So I think that's where it all starts with this conversation, too, is recognizing who God is, recognizing who the master is. It'll put you in this place where you can't help but respond with a heart of, like, servitude type of thing. I brought this up before as well, and this is coming to mind. It's in John chapter 4, and which this is one of the toughest lines Jesus ever dropped, bro. So this is John chapter 4, the woman at the well. So they're sitting, and she's like, yo, you want a drink or whatever? And then I'm paraphrasing. I'm paraphrasing, y'all. I'm paraphrasing this crazy. But they're chilling. She asks him if he want a drink, and then Jesus says something along the lines of, he says, if you knew the gift of God and you knew, and if you knew who it was you were speaking to, you would be asking me for a drink. And he's essentially saying, if you had the right perspective of who I was, your response would be different. You know what I'm saying? You would be asking me for a drink. And I think to my point, what I've been saying is the same for us. If we truly understood who God was and who it was we were speaking to, who it was we were praying to, who it was we were worshiping, our response would be different. And I really think that worship, being a servant, is less like an action and more like a reaction. It's a reaction to him. It's a reaction to recognizing who he is. That's why the word says things like, Paul says, in view of God's mercies, let us present our bodies as living sacrifices. It's like, in view of his mercies. It's more like a reaction. So I think, like I said at the beginning of my point, being a slave becomes easy when you recognize who the master is, right? A slave to righteousness. So I think that's important. We have to recognize who's telling us to let go of the thing. That's what I was trying to get to. Who's telling you to let go of the thing? You know, because it's hard, but I think it'll become easier when you realize that, like, yo, it's God saying this, though. It's like, you know what I'm saying? It's God. This ain't no random. This ain't a friend. This ain't a peer. This is God telling me to let it go.
Big God.
Big God. Big God telling me to let it go. So it's like, I think that in terms of how, when you truly remember that and remind yourself of that, it becomes a little bit easier. Like, yeah, I can do this. I trust them type of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
No, yeah. And no, that's powerful. And I was looking, trying to find, like, the definition of slavery, which sounds crazy. Just trying to add more to the context of this, because when we think about that particular word or idea, it can be naturally more in a connotation that is degrading, yeah, negative, and it's more an action not of your own decision or free will, but something that's more involuntary. And so what I found was this idea can also be linked to submission to a dominating influence or force. So whenever I think about this idea, when it talks about making ourselves slaves, it is submitting under the rulership, influence, and power of God and who he is, right? It's something that we voluntarily do, right? You hear Paul speak about this a lot, that, hey, I have become a slave, a bond servant. Like, I have made myself nothing. What? In view of God himself and the gospel. It's, I love how you said it. It genuinely is a reaction. Mm. And so for the last part, so for you, what does it look like to like submit, make yourself a bond servant as you're looking at God in a new light to like remove all these things, you know, or whatever it is, to actually let it go, so you're not in these cycles of what, not even cycles, but, you know, just bound to or influenced heavily by whatever it is that the enemy can try and just, you know, hold over your head and like get you to move.
Most definitely. I think if God, and anytime in my life God told me to let go of something, it always felt foreign. Like God never, in a way, there's always a piece of it where when I let it go, to an extent, I recognize like, oh, this is why God told me to let it go. I think the difficult part for a lot of us is not going back to the thing. You know what I mean? And I think, most definitely. Let's go there. I think the hard part for most of us isn't letting go of it. It's just like, you know, keeping it out of our hands. So for me, what that looks like is, I'll let go of the thing and I'll see a difference. Like, okay, I can see like why God told me to let this thing go. But I try to be intentional about always asking God to remind me of how it felt when I had the thing in my hands. Like, and not necessarily I don't ask him to remind me how it felt when it was in my hands, but I ask him to help me remember how it feels when it left, if that makes sense. Like, when it left, the peace I felt, when it left, the wholeness I felt, help me to remember this. Because I think what the enemy will try to do is remind us of the good feeling of the thing that you let go of. Because if it's sin, like, we understand that, like, you know, there's an enticing part of sin, right? That might feel good, that might feel temporarily pleasing. And the enemy will try to remind us of that so heavily. But it's like, I ask God to continually remind me of how it felt when I let that thing go, right? Because I think that feeling always overpowered the temporary feeling that I felt. It's lasting. It's more consistent. So I do think that's a big part of it, because that's something the enemy will try to do. Yeah. So yeah, I say that, like, I pray that God will remind me all the time. So that's one thing in terms of what that looks like for me when I'm letting go of cycles, letting go of habits.
No, yeah. And I'll kind of add into that. This is the last part of Romans 6, starting at verse 20. It says, when you were slaves to sin, you were free from the control of righteousness. What benefit did you reap at the time from the things you are now ashamed of? Those things result in death. But now that you have been set free from sin and have become slaves of God, the benefit you reap leads to holiness, and the result is eternal life.
Yeah.
So to your point, like how he says, what benefit did you reap at the time from the things you indulge in that you are now ashamed of? Like, what did that produce in your life? And is that worth it? Is that a price that you're willing to pay and which you would want to go back to and bring into your life? And so I think that is a perspective to definitely always take note of and be aware of, not necessarily obviously sitting or reminiscing or being within like our past or our sin or like what it felt or anything of that nature, but just being cognizant of the life that we have now and where it comes from, and knowing that there was a moment where that wasn't the case.
Yeah.
And man, I would say when it comes to this, you know, I think in the process of letting something go, you have to essentially pick up something else. And so, you know, all right, like if you're letting go of lust, like what is it that you're bringing into your life? Like if you're going to depart from anger, okay, like what are you then going to hold on to at this point? Mm. There has to be a very specific and intentional exchange in our life for the things that we are still holding on to. Mm-hmm. And so I know that's definitely something that has helped me in terms of just like the practicality of like what that looks like, you know. So if again, one door, if I'm closing that, then it's opening another that leads to life, yeah, right? So if it's like relationships that no longer serve me, it's then opening myself up to the potential and possibility of community that then brings life, right? It's, you know, if I'm going to put away these youthful lusts and desires, and it's opening up doors that feed my soul, my purpose, and what God's called me to, whether that be more quiet time, if that's more conversations, if that's mentorship, if it's discipleship, if it's serving, no matter what that looks like, there always has to be an exchange. And that exchange is always going to come from God himself and what surrounds that, like mm-hmm. practical ways of like digging deeper and studying the word, praying, fasting is really what I wanted to say and like get into. So I would say that, and to harp on fasting, that is exactly what it does. Like, it closes the door to your flesh, opens you up to the spirit. It is literally the act of essentially closing anything that still may be open, or doors that you have still allowed to remain cracked, and completely opening up like heaven in your life and allowing the spirit to do what it does. And so that's what I would say. And I'm talking about like physical fasting, no food, no nothing. I've never fasted without water. I don't know. I'm not me that either. Spiritual yet.
I'm not built like that.
But yeah. No food for sure. And it's just allowing myself to be submitted and becoming this metaphorical slave to the spirit and what God wants to do, and leaving my flesh completely behind. So that's what I would say to that. Yeah. Do you have anything else? I don't know if there was something else you wanted to add.
That's all I had.
So that's the one, how to let go of hard things. It's easy to be a slave. This sounds crazy. If this was like clip, bro, out of context of like the verse and everything, it'd be OD. Now, what'd you say?
I didn't think about that. Without context, that is crazy. It's easy to be a slave to righteousness when you know who the master is.
It's easy to be a slave when you know who the master is.
Nah, you got to add the slave to righteousness.
He said PC, I want PC, no clip. PC. He's cooked. So, look, Romans 6, love it. Read it. Meditate on it. Let this be your encouragement for whatever it is that you need to let go of. And in terms of the pursuit of righteousness, holiness, and what God's calling you to do. So, man, we love y'all. Bro, I feel like these last few weeks have been going crazy. I'm loving these conversations.
Real talk, man.
So, yeah, Dang, I'm forgetting the outro. But okay. Yeah, anyway, stay you.
Stay real.
And stay humble. We'll catch y'all Friday. Much love.